This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Disabled Persons Assembly Notable Radio Show. A whole new attitude coming your way on Otago Access Radio. DPA is the voice of all disabled people, whether the disability be physical, sensory, learning, psychosocial or age-related. Tune in to hear how we can work collaboratively to achieve inclusion for all New Zealanders. DPA's Notable Radio Show, every second Friday afternoon at 1:30 on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM and 1575 AM.
Kia ora, te whānau. Kia ora. Welcome to DPA Dunedin Notable Radio, Disabled Persons Assembly, that is, Notable Radio, for this Friday, the 26th of May, 2023. We're almost in June, can you believe that? We've got our first King's Birthday weekend for, as I've worked it out, 72 years coming up next weekend. So that's a bit of a breather for us. Anyway, we've got on the show today a guest, and that is Councillor Mandy Mayhem from the Dunedin City Council, who is the chair of the Disability Issues Advisory Group. Welcome onto the program, Mandy.
Kia ora, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
That's great. Okay, let's start with the questions to begin with. You've got an interesting background, haven't you, in terms of your life before becoming a councillor. Tell us a bit about that.
Thanks, Chris. Unusual. I never thought I would be a city councillor. It's been a long journey to this point. I did grow up here in Dunedin, Brockville, State Housing New Zealand, in fact. And when I turned 5 years old, we moved out to Blueskin Bay, Waitati, where my mum has a big farm near the eco sanctuary, in fact. I grew up having a wonderful country lifestyle, but with a solo mum, you know, fairly underprivileged. When I went to university, I studied Taekwondo at the same time and did my black belt in Taekwondo. I'm a third dan. I went overseas representing New Zealand at the Asian Games to Kuala Lumpur, and I tried out for the Olympics in Barcelona. I can't remember what year that was.
And 92. Then
thank you. And I relocated to Wellington and I changed my degree. I'd been studying education and English and psychology. And I moved to Wellington and joined the Women's Studies Department that was set up by, one of my tutors was Phillida Bunkle. I was Phillida's housekeeper for a little while, and I finished my degree, did my BA, cross credits between Otago and Victoria, and then, well, they asked me to do honours, but instead of that, I ran away and joined a circus. Would you believe? Ridgway's family came to town, and they were looking for a clown. So throughout my university days, I'd done quite a lot of children's entertaining and working through student job search, and I had a sort of a comedy routine and a clown costume. My name was Slap Happy the Clown, and I'd while I was studying alongside of my study, I'd been researching sort of the background and history of circus just as an interest and a passion of mine. And lo and behold, yeah, I found myself compelled to join the show. I had a house truck, a little J. Bedford school bus, and a dog, and I packed up all my other stuff and just put it in storage, and I went on the road for 5 years, touring mainly the North Island. I started out as the clown, but straight away the ringmaster ran away with one of the other clowns, Alphonse. They were all called Alphonse. Mark 1, 2, and 3. And I immediately found myself being the ringmaster as well as chief animal carer. We had little Shetland ponies and dogs and actually a chimpanzee, Sonny the chimpanzee. I was very privileged to be a buddy to Sonny And then we worked with one of the animal activist groups, SAFE, Save Animals from Exploitation, to relocate Sunny to a sanctuary in Zambia in the Congo Basin called Chimfangshu, run by the Siddle family. I think Sheila Siddle got an OBE or some kind of Queen's Honour back when we had a queen. And they do amazing job, you know, saving and repatronising animals. It's a lot of poaching happens over in there, so a lot of young orphan chimps. And Sunny, our chimp, was such a well-adjusted young man, teenager that he was. He immediately became sort of a role model figure for the young little orphan chimps that they had there. So that kind of worked out beautifully in the end.
Now, jumping forward a bit, that's a bit of a colourful history, I dare say, and probably one of the most colourful background stories of any current councillor who's currently serving there.
I don't think any other councillors could say they'd been in the circus or a ringmaster, although you could make some parallels between the council and a three-ring circus sometimes.
Yes, yes.
I'm joking.
Why did you want to become a councillor, though? What drove you towards that?
Oh, yeah, it's been a slow evolution. When I was in my 30s, I moved back to my community, Waitati, where I've actively been involved in volunteering and caring for members of the community. And I'm on lots of committees, and my community asked me to run for the local Waikawaiti Coast Community Board. So I sat on the community board for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I also sit on some other advisory boards, Fire and Emergency New Zealand. I'm on a local advisory committee for Otago, and I'm very interested in emergency responses and community resilience within the community. And I guess as more as my responsibilities increased, I thought I really should go for city council, where I could have more of a voice. And I like to think that I represent members of the community that are the minority, you know, others, mm-hmm. People from a lower socioeconomic background. I'm very open and liberal in my acceptance of people. So I campaigned for inclusivity and accessibility, because growing up in the area where I did, we had a long history with mental health, Cherry Farm, Orokanui, and historically the Seacliff Asylum. So there's a lot of people in my community that have worked in the psychiatric industry, and it was a natural progression for me when Cherry Farm closed. My first job as a teenager was working for Hawkesbury Trust, a network of parents of ex-Cherry Farm people. And I supported them in a home-like environment. And I've worked throughout my whole career, private and in different healthcare, in mental health and in aged care. One of my clients was a person in a wheelchair. And in my experience of my own grandparents looking after them, my grandma and both my grandparents had Alzheimer's, and I worked in caring for people with dementia. My grandfather was blinded after the war, my great-grandfather, sorry. And also was a care worker for our local reverend, you know, elderly gentlemen in the neighbourhood, helping them to be supported in their homes with showering and other things like that. You know, when you get to be in your 90s, things aren't as easy as they are when we're young. I think I've jumped into the next question, Chris, a little bit.
Which is, do you or your family, Whānau, have lived experience of disability? You've answered quite a bit of that already. But do you have lived experience yourself, if you want to
Yeah, well, my husband, he's just had his shoulder replaced. So that was a long journey for us as well. He used to be a skateboarding champion, snakeboard actually, and he, although he's quite a lot younger than me, he has managed to incur a lot of injuries to his physical body in his life, smashing and bashing around in the concrete skateboarding bowls, you know. So he's quite wrecked up, and he's the youngest person I think that they've ever done a shoulder replacement to, and he'll have a long recovery now of about a year coming right from that, but hopefully that helps him physically. And with my martial arts background, I similarly have, I guess I've got invisible disabilities where none of my joints like to function the way they used to. Back in my day, we were encouraged to do quite a lot of high impact physical things, like actually punching the wall and doing things that would be deemed stupid and reckless and harmful to your body now by most sporting standards. So I struggle at that, and roller derby kind of finished me off, roller skating around and hitting the deck a few times. I feel like my knees, hips, back, shoulder, I have a lot of aches and pains more than most. From a life well lived, but yeah, I struggle to walk maybe more than a few blocks without aches and pains. So I understand what it is to have mobility issues just from my own lived experience, I guess.
What drove you then to become chair of the Disability Issues Advisory Group?
Well, like I say, I campaigned on council to advocate for people for accessibility and an inclusive city that's for everybody. Every year I run my Kate Bush Wuthering Heights flash mob red dress dance, and I choose the lower octagon for that because the surface is flush that people can roll in and roll out, and we modify the dance moves for all levels of participation for people with mobility aids or even if they just want to be seated, and I've got ribbons on sticks for them to wave around. I love George Street and the development because I think finally and at last we are paving the way, very literally, to a much more accessible city for everyone. And I'm delighted. It's been a long time coming. So because of my other background and knowing what it's like, one of my clients in a wheelchair, I did a lot of pushing them around South Dunedin, and there's nothing more harrowing than trying to cross a big wide piece of road like what's the busy one, Andy Bay Road,
Anderson's Bay, and then there's Cargill's Corner and King Edward Street.
Terrifying, you know.
It
you
is.
Literally have to run, and my client would put a lot of faith in me that I wasn't going to capsize them into the ditch. And the camber of the road, the in and the out as you go up the curvature, the way the road, and every time they fix the road and they put some more surface on, it just increases that angle, that dangerous angle dip in and out of the gutter there. And so I'm acutely aware from having navigated some pretty average streets of Dunedin, I know we could do a lot better and go a lot further to address those things, along with, you know, lime scooters parked willy-nilly all over the pavement.
Yes, all of those sorts of barriers. And there are barriers that face other disabled people in accessing our physical and built environment, and also even in terms of councils, communications and information, all of those sorts of things. So do you see the role of DIAG as working towards addressing those issues, pushing the council towards that?
Absolutely. And I'm pleased that they've taken on board having a language interpreter at a lot of events these days. I think that's fantastic progress. And from my client that was a wheelchair user, I noticed things like door handles and light switches needing to be placed at a sort of below eye level, more waist height levels in buildings. And if you think about how much ancient architecture we've got in the city, gosh, we've got a long way to go.
We have, and the City Council, of course, has a role in building consents and issuing those consents and making sure that at least they're meeting the minimum accessibility standards. But we in DPA believe, and as do other disabled people's organisations and so forth, that universal design is the way of the future. Anyway, what do you see your role as in relation to both DIAG and the council?
Well, if you watch any of the council meetings online, you'll notice that I'm the person that always says, what about accessibility? Oh, you know, these tracks and trails, they're all well and good, but how many of them are accessible? And I raised the other day that there were a lot of comments that were made on social media online that were fed back, you know, that were towards the annual plan hearings. But because people didn't make a formal submission, those 500 comments on social media weren't officially captured in the feedback there. So that was disappointing to me, because what I read online were a lot of comments about accessible playgrounds and play equipment children with disabilities. And then when I read through the annual plans, that wasn't really captured there because you know, social media hadn't actually counted. So I've suggested in my feedback that, you know, we need direct questions that we can capture on social media that will be valid and that will make it to the annual plan submission so that they can be incorporated in there. And I saw, I did see in the annual plan about the audit, disabilities issues audit of the George Street area. Was that your organisation, Chris, that made submissions?
We did. We didn't make an oral submission due to the fact that I pushed the wrong button on the council's online submission page, the web page. However, we did make a written submission that was accepted through other channels.
I saw it captured there.
That's
something
good.
About waste reduction as well.
All of that, yes, pushed for accessibility to all of council services and also its regulatory activities like building consents and accessibility, obviously. Now,
Think of it, can I just mention an event that's happening? It's the Friday School Strike for Climate March in the Octagon from 3 till 6 p.m. And the important message is there's going to be a sign language interpreter there. If anyone's listening that's interested in going along, sign language. If you could pass that on through your networks, that someone will be there interpreting all of the speakers.
That'll be great. And disabled people, as well as the deaf community, are one of the most disproportionately impacted by climate change, and that unfortunately is the case. That's why we as disabled people, as well as the deaf community, need to be a part of those discussions. Anyway, given that it's early days, as you've only chaired your second meeting of the DIAG, what do you hope to achieve on it while you're there?
I think it's captured in the word advisory group. So I think it's amazing that we've got so many networks of great humans sitting around the table that are able to raise these issues and feel like they've got a voice, and that, you know, all comments are valid, and that we're all equal around the table. And I love at the moment the way that staff from the council are coming along and genuinely engaging and listening. And I can already see that we're going to get amazing results.
That's really great. I'm just hopeful that that is the case. during this current term of council. Finally, how do you think that we as disabled people, both as individuals and most importantly as a collective, can make our voices heard before council?
Well, I already mentioned the annual plan hearings that just happened. So we're always doing rounds of consultation and asking for feedback from the community.
Sorry about that. There were technical issues with the end of the interview with Councillor Mandy Mayhem. Anyway, unfortunately, she was going to say, and I asked her the question, or was about to ask her the question about how disabled people can participate in council. People are welcome, she said, to come to the public forum, which is held before all council meetings in person or via Zoom, to speak at any council meeting. And she also, Mandy Mayhem, has a Facebook page and her contact details, her council contact details, are on the DCC website. Given that my own internet connection is a bit unstable today, we'll just have to call it quits a bit earlier. We're back on the air again on Friday, the 9th of June, for another edition of DPA Digital Radio. See you all then. And by the way, this show repeats tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. And also you can find this show as a podcast if you missed it. Anyway, ka kite anō.
A little song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Body down, so don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Now there is this song I wrote. I hope you learned it note for note like good little children. Don't worry. Be happy. Listen to what I say. In your life, expect some trouble. But when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Be happy now. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
Disabled Persons Assembly Notable Radio Show. A whole new attitude coming your way on Otago Access Radio. DPA is the voice of all disabled people, whether the disability be physical, sensory, learning, psychosocial, or age-related. Tune in to hear how we can work collaboratively to achieve inclusion for all New Zealanders. DPA's Notable Radio Show, every second Friday afternoon at 1:30 on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM and 1575 AM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.